January 12th, 2016. A day that will live in infamy. Is everyone familiar with exactly what happens on January 12th of next year? Is anyone concerned about what's happening on January 12th of next year? Is everyone who doesn't know what's happening concerned that they don't know what's happening on January 12th of next year?
The world will end.
It's not quite that dire.
Oh.
Little bit of background on kind of how we started out. So we're gonna be talking about Internet Explorer. We're also gonna talk about Edge. We're gonna talk about wherever you are. There's kind of the baseline assumption that I'm on Windows 7 today, probably, maybe some folks are on 8.1. Hopefully most folks are thinking about Windows 10. We have no assumptions of where you are today. We wanna tell you kind of where we are from a whole support organization, how to get there, how to manage it, really targeting the IT administrator. How can you help push your organization forward? So I'm Chris Jackson. I'm the App Compat guy. I'm a nerd. My colleague, Alan Burchill.
Hello, I'm Alan Burchill. I'm an IT pro. I would like to think that I'm somewhat like all you guys. I work for a large multinational organization, monitoring, managing Active Directory. I worry about Internet Explorer and that date because I know pain is coming and we still may or may not be on older versions of Internet Explorer. So I share your pain. I hope that what we're going to talk to you about today is going to help you get through this pain. You know, it's a bit like childbirth. At the end of it, it's really great. But
well, let's de-painify. I think we're painting a bit of a dark picture, and I want to really kind of set the tone of what really was going on in our thick skulls at Microsoft, and the deliberations that led to that. So for those of you who weren't already aware, on January 12th of 2016, I keep repeating that date. That's not accidental. We will be ending support for all but the latest version of Internet Explorer on whatever platform you happen to be on. And that latest version qualifier, we could just say IE 11, but the thing is, not everybody is on a platform that supports it. So if you happen to be one of the two customers that deployed Windows Vista,
anyone here?
Then you could only modernize through IE 9. But if you are on Windows 7, which represents most of the folks that I end up talking to, or on Windows 8.1, then you would need to get to IE 11 before the end of support date. So why in the heck did we do that? What were we thinking? Because previously it was, you get to pick whatever IE you want on the platform you've got. Choice is yours. And suddenly we're taking that choice away from you, saying, hey, you've got to upgrade. And we did not do that lightly. It was actually a really difficult decision, but here was the scenario that we faced. We were not only presenting every organization with a choice, which browser would you like? We were also presenting every single one of your vendors with a choice. And it turns out that with no exceptions thus far, I have yet to meet a single customer that can say, yes, if I choose this browser, all of my vendors will support it. It has never happened, right? So this fragmentation in the ecosystems led to customers saying, well, this one is supported on IE8, this one is only supported on N or N-1. It's kind of a de facto standard among cloud services. So for this one, I need 8, and this one, I need either 10 or 11. And what we kind of thought as nerds, right, is as nerds, we said, well, here's the actual choice you're making if you distill it. I can use IE8, in which case the stuff that requires 11 or 10, which happens to be based on HTML5, is just flat out not going to work because IE8 doesn't do HTML5. So I have some applications that are unsupported and don't work, and other applications that are supported, and because they're supported, they work. The inverse is I could get to IE11 and probably be able to get most things to work. Except then the older stuff might not be supported. Now, we saw that as being a better outcome because, well, now I've got some things that are supported and some things that are unsupported. That hasn't changed. But I can probably get everything to work, and that has changed. Everything working is better than things not working. As the other one I haven't fixed, the support problem, is one that still exists. How do we change that support posture? Now, our hope is that by defragmenting and saying we're only going to support the latest, that vendors will do the same. And we've seen this happen. It doesn't happen perfectly. I don't expect it to be a magic bullet. I'll give you an example. If you would like support for your Java runtime, you have one and only one choice, the latest one. Consequently, there's no one that has to run an older version of Java, right?
Version 8? Everyone. Yeah. 8. Yeah.
Right? It doesn't get perfect because there's some vendor somewhere that's like, no, no, I just want to use this old one. But it got a lot better. And that's what our hope. What can we do by starting to defragment the ecosystem to help move the web forward, to help move customers into a better place? Because even though it was the devil you knew, it was still the devil. And every time we have this conversation with IT leaders, with CIOs, with even CEOs, they all go, you know what, you're right, it really did kind of suck. We're angry at you now, but we were already angry at you for this other thing that I couldn't make a choice. I was left with a paradox of not being able to pick one thing or the other. So I have this choice, and I agree, we should go down that journey, but why is this all on my back? Can't you help and do something for me? And that was what we wanted to respond to next. What can we do to make it easier? So the journey to app compat in the browser really starts with, and the site incidentally I'm going to be going through here is, this is one of my former favorite websites. This is tracking the demise of Internet Explorer 6, which alas is not quite dead. If you can believe that.
Go China.
I know China's holding up the fort here. It actually, a year and a half ago, was over a quarter IE6 in a nation of 1 billion people, so that's a little frightening. But here's the overall concept that we're looking for in terms of what's the effectiveness of what we've got. The way that we've always historically approached application compatibility in the browser has been through this concept that we call document modes. So just to kind of level set what's being put in there. A document mode is a way to behave as if you were an earlier version of the browser. So it's not the actual earlier browser, but it's really good emulation. And by really good, I mean, we're actually going to only run those JavaScript things that are valid. We're going to render layout elements that are valid from that version of the browser and emulate it that way. And we found that this was an extremely effective way of doing things, but it could be better. Something that we've been doing for a long time. It started back all the way in IE6, in fact. IE6 had this concept of standards mode and quirks, two different ways to behave. And the developer would choose which one they wanted by putting a doc type in. So starting off with this effective framework, the challenge always was the developers were the ones in charge of whether or not they used this. The same developers who were responsible for whether they put the doc type in or not. How many of you can honestly say they know exactly how a doc type works to modify the behavior of a page? So exactly nobody. In my journeys, and I've talked to north of 500 different customers in 37 different countries, the number of web developers, the people responsible for this, who understand that difference, is now 8. So the people who know this have no idea they're on the hook for this. It's their job, but they don't know it. And when you start getting into specifying document modes, which is an IE-only construct that requires you to put in an XUA-compatible meta tag or header in the web server, the number of folks who actually have any awareness of what that is even smaller than 8. Great construct, too hard to use, and we put it in the hands of people who don't know. And like so many things at Microsoft, we're developers, we love developers, we want to give everything to the developers first, and the developers screw it all up for everybody, and the admins have to come in and fix it all up. So that's what we're going to talk about today, is that handoff, because we started with this concept, no one could do it, and we started repackaging it to hand it over to IT pros. And we repackaged it initially as something that we call enterprise mode. And enterprise mode really was, pick the docs mode that IE8 would have picked, number one. And then number two, how can we make this even more compatible than it already was? Because the stats were really good, but we wanted to be better. So we had to do things. For example, in enterprise mode, we disable some performance optimizations in the browser. One of the things we do in IE11 to make it seem faster to the user is if you land on a page and you've got a very strong clue that you're probably going to go to a link off of that page, for example, a next button is a very strong clue that most of the time someone's going to click it, and we've got evolving heuristics around what that is, then we'll go ahead and prefetch that page, pre-render the page, so if you actually click on the next button, which you're very likely to do if we forecast it, we can just take the process and swap it out because of the changes we made starting in IE8 with the process model. Turns out if you're in ActiveX control, that freaks you out. All of a sudden the process, poof, gone, another one, poof, appears, and you're like, who are you? So we turn that off. Added compatibility. The numbers that we get in terms of outcomes, right? And this is what I always based on. We did our development on enterprise mode based on what exists in the real world, and then we kept listening. We kept saying, if you have a premier support contract and you've got something that enterprise mode isn't fixing, and it truly isn't fixing it, it's not just that you haven't used it right, we take a non-decrement incident and figure out how do we make it better so we can continue to improve and evolve and improve and evolve to the point where today the number of the customers percentage-wise who are able to fix literally everything that breaks in their environment is more than half. More than half of people need to do nothing more than configure enterprise mode. Right? And by configure enterprise mode, it's not just the one thing. So I'll go into the real quickly, take a look here. We have a bunch of different things that exist under the umbrella. The original one that was called enterprise mode, in November of last year, we added additional document modes. Really, really helpful if you're not on 8, but you're on 9 or 10 instead, and you want to duck it back here. And some great feedback we got was, hey, I like this manageability so much, and Alan's going to go into all the crusty details of this, that I'd like to get rid of my compat view group policy because it's too granular. You can do that too. First, we add it through the document mode. But then people said, hey, what if I need both compat view and enterprise mode? I couldn't do that. You can, starting in March, with IE7 enterprise mode, which is basically enterprise mode plus compat view, the same approach there. With the combination of all these things, more than half of people can fix literally everything. And the maximum number of applications that we've had any single customer not be able to fix using enterprise mode is 3. Out of everything they've got. And that's really a game changer, right? And I like to, we have to behave. I'm one of those people, I'm not gonna lie to you because you're gonna go do it and you're gonna find out whether or not I was lying, so there's kind of no point in me deceiving you. Really, really effective, and suddenly I can really change my strategy. If my strategy historically was, hey, if it's broken, I have a 6-month dev cycle, I test more stuff longer. If my strategy is, hey, there's a 99% chance that the fix will be updating and deploying a new XML file, I have to test quite as much because the fix comes really fast. I have to determine, can I sustain half an hour of downtime versus can I sustain 6 months of downtime? And that drives very, very different behavior. So that's where we started with on enterprise mode. Alan, can you kind of walk us through how enterprise mode works and what the experience is from an admin perspective?
Okay. Excellent. So I'll just lay the ground here. I have the two computers here. I've got a domain controller and got a Windows 10 workstation. We have two websites. One website is called the Internet. The other website is just the intranet. Okay. So you notice here we've got enterprise mode configured here for the intranet. It's already been turned on. It's a very modern website, as you can tell. Here, though, we have a subdirectory of the website. It's called the Best Tech Ed Session in New Zealand 2014. Look, that's our session. That's great. But unfortunately, it has an embedded audio tag file here. And of course, that page is running in enterprise mode. It's running in IE8 mode. So an IE8 doesn't support the HTML5 audio tag. So unfortunately, I can't play you the audio from that track, and then we could just walk away and just don't worry about the rest. No, anyway. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump over here to the domain controller. And this domain controller, I don't recommend that you start modifying the enterprise mode site list on your domain controllers, but you know, for the purposes of this demonstration. So here I've got enterprise mode site list manager, and it's loaded what I've had loaded previously. As you can see here, the intranet.corp.local, which was the intranet, was loaded as a IE7 mode document, and it says, basically it says it's going to try to load it in IE7 mode. I've got web URL there, just somewhere else. I could put in something like, oh no, I'm searching there, I'm not adding. I could put in something like the internet. Yep. And I can say, well, what do I want to open that? I want to go default mode because, you know, it's the internet. I want to open a modern standards sort of web page. Most websites now on the internet use more modern standards than obviously the intranet. So I can go in, I can go save there. And then I can save this as an XML file. Notice here, though, I've got an option here to validate the URL. So if I have a bunch of URLs, I want to make sure that they're actually valid URLs and I haven't fat-fingered the URLs, I can go through validate. Usually, if I tick that, when I go add, it'll actually do the validation. So if I go HTTP badurl.com, that's dot stuff, goes off and it tries to validate the URL basically. But I've turned that off and it says, yeah, we couldn't find the URL. That's fine. I don't have actual full internet access here. No, I do have the internet here, but not full internet access, you know what I mean? So I can go through here. I can save this to the XML. I'm just saving this as a standard XML file. I'm just placing this on a web server. Again, don't make the web server your domain controller. I'm not recommending that. That would be bad. But if we just crack open that file, can we have a look at the internals of the file? That would be that one there. My favorite editor. So basically what it's done is it's taken that compatibility list here and put it into an XML view, placed it as an XML file. The rules version here is very important. The way that the browser knows that this list has changed is it checks the version number. But an interesting note is that it doesn't check for a larger version number. It only checks for a version number that has actually changed. So if you go through and think, oh, I'll make a change to the list, but I'll go back and I'll quickly decrement the number back to what it was originally because I'm just doing some light testing, or you change the number to something lower in the hopes that the browser won't pick it up. It will actually pick it up, so keep that in mind. But you can see here we've got domain exclude, force compatibility mode true, and there's the intranet there. We've got other ones here, do not transition equals true. We'll talk about that in a minute. And then we've got other ones here that says exclude. So we want to exclude those from the compatibility view here, which is our DC01, which is web server on the domain controller. And we want to put in the internet there. We want to exclude that because, of course, we don't want to put that in enterprise mode because it's the internet. Okay, so I've updated that file. And now I want to be able to configure the browser for the users so that it can pick up this file. You know, what you do is you send them an email, say, go into the registry, group policy, of course, all right? So here I have a group policy. It's any group policy targeted to the users. So when you're starting off, you might not want to target this to all your users straight away. I always recommend when you start off, start with a security filtered group policy, create a security group. Remove the authenticated users apply to all and add that security group to the group policy to say apply only to these selected users. Add those users in your organization, you probably all have them. Those users in your organization that are friendly, the ones that aren't going to start yelling and screaming to your manager when something breaks, the ones that are going to come to your desk and say, hey, by the way, I just found something was wrong. You know you'll have them. They're your favorite users. You know, so you can start getting these guys to test it. Okay, get their computers on the list. All right, but anyway, so go to administrative templates. Funnily enough, it's under Internet Explorer. All right, and here, so use the enterprise, i.e. website list. So basically, it's going to say, Internet Explorer, go to this URL, download this XML file. Every time you open and close again, check to see if there's a new version there. But basically, that's what we want to configure. So I'm going to just go and enable that. Enterprise mode site list manager XML. Okay. So we've just applied that. So now I've configured the browser or policy for the browser to go actually pull down that enterprise mode site list. So I'm just going to go back here. I just want to show you something very quickly. I open Internet Explorer. Okay, notice nothing really happened there. I've got Fiddler running here in the background, which is monitoring web traffic. Okay. Now I'm just going to run a GP update. So this should now apply the policy to my computer. Policy goes out to the browser. Browser now knows that, okay, now I have to download this compatibility view list. Just wait for that to finish.
Yep. And while, let me actually interject a couple of quick side comments here based on what we've seen from experiences with the field. One of the things he went straight away to doing was he hosted it on a web server. And we actually will support either from a file server or a web server perspective. And so one of the frequently asked questions that we get is, well, which one should I do? And the benefit of putting on a web server, we kind of, you know, fast forward to the conclusion, but here's where I would consider it. Where folks put on a file server is if the web server team is really difficult to work with, doesn't want to comply, doesn't help us out, and blah, 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 and that happens. The advantages you get is when I'm going and checking for a new version of the list on the web server, it's going to happen when IE launches. The very first time the policy is applied, it happens immediately. Subsequent to that, and Alan's probably going to show us this, it happens about 60 to 70 seconds after IE launches. It's going to go out and say, hey, is there a new one? If it's hosted on a web server, we'll actually keep and use the web cache to be able to see, oh, 302 not modified, you've already got one. So the conversation is very, very crisp and short. Here's an HTTP request. Here's an HTTP response, 302 not modified. It's very short. If, however, I get a much larger list and I'm using a file server, then in order to determine whether or not it's changed, I don't get to make use of that logic on the web server. Instead, I have to download the whole file and then crack it open and take a look at that rules version number at the very first line, which can potentially mean a lot more traffic. In fact, we tested personally within the product group in engineering, we tested on site lists of up to 20,000 entries. Not to be outdone, we have at least one customer who is now in excess of 40,000 entries going towards 50,000. And that gets to be a pretty large XML list when it comes to town. So that's sort of the rationale behind why he made that choice and things to consider as you're deciding where to host it.
Yeah. So now I'm just going to open my browser here. Yeah, it worked that time. So I don't know if you noticed that before, the group policy that I edited, make sure that it's enabled. Okay, so anyway, I went back and I enabled that group policy and now it works. So you notice I opened the browser here, and in the background, as soon as I open the browser here, very first time you open the browser, it goes, hey, I haven't been to that website, I haven't cached the file before, I need to get a new copy of the file. So it will actually then go download the file the first time. Okay, and so here we have HTTP 200, and it's got the URL, I'll zoom in. So that's the URL there that I typed into the group policy. So it's now gone and downloaded the Enterprise Mode Site List Manager. So it knows the internet is fine. I have the intranet. I don't have intranet. The intranet. I have intranet. Typing is hard. Okay, I have the intranet. But I still have this problem with this sub website here that I want to fix, which is a sub URL. So maybe you have a full website, it has lots of sub URLs in the website that are hosted, that maybe use modern tags, but the main landing page of your intranet maybe still has some problems with the latest versions of Internet Explorer. So how do I basically get a sub URL to work? So basically, I go back into the Enterprise Mode Site List Manager. I then add the actual URL that I want to. /tech-ed. So you notice here, it's actually automatically recognized the fact that you've already got a sub URL. Pardon? Oh. Oh, yeah, typing is hard, see? Thank you. So it's automatically recognized that I've got a sub URL here, and it's just like, oh, well, how do you want to open that? It's like, we can open it in IE11 mode, so because that's, you know, latest and greatest. I'll save that. I'll now save that out as a file. Something to note, when you save it out as a file, and I'll show you how very quickly. So notice here the version. 28. Okay, I'm just going to close that. I'm going to go back and I'm going to save. Replace the file. And if I actually go back to that file now, version version 29. So when you save the file, it actually increments that XML number automatically for you. Notice also, of course, it's added the exception path here. So now I go back to my browser. I immediately close and open it again, and nothing happens, right? Why has nothing happened? Well, you don't want the browser, and Chris might be able to explain this, but the browser basically, it waits a number of seconds, as he mentioned before, for it to actually get the new site list. All right, it's about 65 seconds. So we could sit here, we could twiddle our thumbs, or we could just, you know, delete the registry key. So here we have a registry key. And it might actually happen in the background while I'm talking about this, so maybe if I just stretch it out a bit, you'll actually see that after about 65 seconds it'll come in. Otherwise, what we could do is we can go in this current version. Notice how the current version there, the registry key, is set to version 28. So that's how it keeps track of the version of the XML it has. Okay, so not going to happen. Are we going to stretch for a couple more seconds? It's one of those things where you really hope it works, because otherwise you've just wasted 65 seconds of your entire talk. Waiting. So the weather's been good.
It has indeed, if you like rain.
Yes. Hey, look, there it is. All right. Whew. Okay, so you notice here in the background, as Chris mentioned, after about 65 seconds, it's downloaded, and it picked up the fact that, hey, this is a new file. All right, that's why it hasn't just done a cache. You know, is this the same file? Can I just return it from cache? No, it's actually a new file. So it's actually downloaded a new file, so I'm just going to close and open the browser here.
Yeah, and we actually get a lot of feedback on that. Why isn't it immediate? And a lot of it is for performance. And the thing I would say to keep in mind is that you behave very differently when you're initially setting this up than after you deploy. So what we see from a usage standpoint is that there's this initial burst of people doing a lot of configurations. Here's all the stuff we found beforehand. Here's the initial site list. Then we start getting calls, and here's what we add on to there. So it starts tapering off fairly rapidly as the calls come in, and we get all the sites that we didn't know people used added to the list. And then it goes down to close to zero. And then what eventually happens, and we'll talk about this a little bit later in the talk, is you start to remove sites from the enterprise mode site list. So then you start getting occasional blips later on as you pull them back off as you go through your modernization efforts.
Yep.
So typically, that wait is perfectly fine. In fact, you don't even really see that much change going on.
No, that's right. And so, okay, so what we can see here is that I put in the URL of that sub-website, the tech ed, and of course, this is a HTML audio tag, right? If I play this. Hey, that sounds like a great guy.
Really, really?
I really downloaded the session. We're just going to walk off now.
Play that. Play it back?
No. So basically, you can see now we've got a part of the website. So we've actually got part of our internet running as HTML5. And as an IT pro, I've done that. I haven't had to go to the developers and say, please, developers, can you please change the HTML in your web page?
Hint, the developers don't know how.
Yes. Oh, coders, whoever they are. Yeah, exactly. They don't know how. You know, they didn't know how, they'll talk to you and say, you're an IT pro, aren't you? It's like, what do you know about HTML again? So you basically just bypass them. So, you know, I'm all for going around our developers and going over their heads and just telling their websites to do whatever we need them to do. All right, so as IT pros, this gives us the ability to be able to set those websites that maybe the developer's not even there before. Who has websites in their organization and the developers are gone? Yeah, a few hands coming up there. So it basically empowers you to be able to go set a list to have those websites configured to be in moderns mode or to force them to stay in the older doc type modes.
Yeah, so before we go, there's one other group policy I want to take a look at, and then I want to have some commentary on what the experience we're finding, which is the tools menu option policy. Can you kind of poke into that?
Open up that. Let the users turn it on.
Yeah, so this seemed like a really good idea to us to support testing. It turns out we didn't do a really good job of communicating exactly what the intent was. It's written up, but a lot of people missed the subtleties here. The idea behind putting this on is it's a little bit hidden, and if I look at what's going on here, you know, the tools menu by default, by the way, this is what the actual Microsoft 1994 web page was supposed to look like. Alan just kind of bastardized it a bit.
It was a compatibility issue.
is you have to hit the Alt key in order to see the menu and then see tools, and then enterprise mode would show up in here. I don't have it enabled right now. And what ends up happening is people didn't realize it was testing. Here's the impact of it being testing data. You have no visibility into what end users have configured on those devices. Yes, you could turn on the phone home feature, but otherwise you don't. Also, every single time that you clear your web cache, we throw away that configuration. And all of the sites that the end user fixed for themselves go back to being broken. Not really optimal for an end user feature. The other challenge is that even as a testing feature, it ends up having a couple of very important shortcomings. And really, it kind of boils down to one thing. It's great if you have a simple web page. All of your content comes from one single page. Once you start having compound web pages hosting iframes, then we're only targeting the top-level page, and you're getting whatever inheritance applies to the child page. And composite web pages will often behave differently than they would behave if you set up a site-list XML. So instead,
do you?
Oh, I'm not on here yet?
No, I was just showing in the enterprise mode.
Oh, okay. Option. Good.
Yes.
All right. I thought I hadn't shown anything. I thought that would be bad. So what I've been recommending for people who are running labs is to set up your own private environment in a lab. And I actually have a couple of PowerShell scripts that I can push out to devices to run this. Because a lot of times you actually have an existing organizational group policy. In fact, we at Microsoft do. I found that kind of hard to believe, but we have some sites that we had to go in and fix up in order to get those last few stragglers onto IE11 within Microsoft. That's how pervasive the problem is. But here we just say, I'm going to go ahead and set this registry key to point to my own local host. Here's where I do phone home, but here's where I point to my own local site list. And configure it that way so that I can actually make a private, separate copy of the site list. And I can do this very easily through PowerShell. And the other thing I do once I'm in that environment, right, per what Alan was showing before, there's a registry key that you've got to clobber to force an immediate download. If you're in a lab, you don't want to wait 65 seconds. I mean, that was painful to sit there and watch it. I was like watching paint dry. So here's a quick PowerShell script. It's one line. It's very easy that will go and whack the current version key and force an immediate download in a lab environment. And when customers do that, they're really now playing with a configuration they can copy and paste directly into production XML. Right, and we've been a lot more effective. So the tools option, good idea and concept. Most people find that they're not as successful with it. Having a lab XML file has turned out to be a lot more successful. So that's enterprise mode. A little bit of the details, how do you configure it, how do you put it together? The other thing we then started to think about when we're thinking about, you know, what is it that enterprise customers need help with? I'll tell you what the initial thought process we had was. Step one, get to the new browser. Step two, modernize your content. And the reason why we like that order rather than modernize it first and then deploy the new browser is that when we saw customers who put in as a requirement, update all of your content to work natively in IE11 first, and they were doing it while they have 8, still the one in broad use, they have to make least common denominator choices. Only use HTML that works in both, which means they're limited to a very small, very boring subset of HTML, which does not drive great outcomes. So instead, we say, you know, if you invert those and you actually get to a modern browser very quickly, then if you're investing in modernizing your sites, you can actually use everything that modern browsers have to offer, like HTML audio tags, like Canvas, like forms elements, all of the new stuff that's in there. You can make use of all of it. So why would you deliberately go through and spend a whole bunch of money to make boring old content? A very strange concept. So we said, all right, well, once you get to IE11, how can you figure out what remains? So we invented this thing called Enterprise Site Discovery, a way to finally do inventory and discovery of what are people navigating to? Because it's not like apps where you can go and use System Center or the App Compat Toolkit and go and take a look at what's been installed. People can navigate literally anywhere. How do you figure out what they've gone and used? So we build a tool set that would expose that. And now you have the ability to see, here's what people are going to and the document mode that it's using and why it's using it. So you can start to figure out what's my oldest document modes and how can I start to modernize them. So we shipped it for IE11. And then everyone who was suddenly under pressure to deploy IE11 were like, I could kind of use that list today to get to IE11. And we said, that's a good point. So we downported it and made it available down level as well. What IE Site Discovery will do, it's actually built into the browser. So it's not like installing an ACT agent. It's actually already in the browser. What you run is a PowerShell script that, in essence, turns it on. And the reason why we wanted to make you turn it on is that there are various rules and regulations that vary by country, that vary by organization, that determine what is it that you're allowed to go and look at. Right, and I'll have you take a look at the group policies that configure that when we're done. I'll kind of show the feature and we'll talk about then how to configure it. What it initially does when you first set up is it configures a WMI endpoint. Right, I'm just going to go through and take a look at this endpoint, and I can see, for those of you who speak fluent WMI, I can get information about all the URLs, and I can take an example of all the instances, and here is, I'll go into Wikipedia, and I can see all the details that I got here. I'm in document mode 11 for reason number 9. This is all actually explained in a file that we provide as part of the toolkit, so you can start to see what document modes am I using and what's there. Great. WMI endpoint, great and interesting, but then we followed that up and said, you know what, we can do more. So in what would have been, and I got made fun of yesterday for referring to it as Spring, because it wasn't Spring here, what happened in roughly the March-April timeframe is we also released some additional capabilities to output this as XML rather than just having it come in as WMI. So I cleaned up some XML output. This is from Alan's browsing history.
Not from my history.
So I went ahead and grabbed this. He's really into Hello Kitty. He speaks the Klingon language and really like wants to listen to Hanson for free. These are things that are very important to Alan. But it will collect the doc mode and the reason.
Yes.
Never gonna give you.
Yes. Yeah, Alan just Rickrolled you. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. So it brings it all to this XML file. And what's interesting is that that XML file is not only helpful for folks who don't have an easy way to reach out and grab things that are sitting out in WMI. Kind of depends on the sophistication of the organization. But the other neat thing about it is that you can take that XML file and do a bulk add into the site list manager. So I can go in and grab this XML file, right? And I will go in, this is hanging demos, IE, and then here's site discovery, and this is actually a different list. It's gonna bring in all the URLs and build out that list. All right, here's an okay. And now it's added all of these directly into the enterprise mode site list on my behalf. So now I can directly configure it. And this lights up some really interesting scenarios. So we talk about getting there fast, right? And it's September now. And we got till January. Fast is kind of an important thing. If I want to start off from a position, I've got a technology that I know that for more than half of customers are going to fix everything, if configured correctly, if I can pre-configure it to be a high likelihood of working from the get-go and just deploy that without even looking at stuff, then I can go there more quickly. Now, the downside of taking this approach, right, just import all, keep it all in the same document mode that it's in now, is what if I'm using something like IE8 that a lot of my application vendors don't like very much? As an example, you'd be hard-pressed to come up with even in my own site list, and I work for Microsoft, something that doesn't have Google in it. And if we configure Google to work in IE8 mode, what's going to happen? We're actually going to break it. It's going to start griping at you. Hey, why are you using IE8? Now, it's broken in the exact same way it'd be broken on actual IE8, but it didn't get better like it should have. So what we normally say is spend some time to rationalize this list to pull off the stuff that actually was being held back by the old version of IE and pull them off of your list. But it's nonetheless a great starting point. If I can start off with everything working very similar to the way it works today, that's a great spot to be in moving forward, and then I can gradually pluck these things off. Let's take a look at how those are implemented.
Okay. So, to implement the site load mode discovery, the enterprise site mode discovery is actually a zip file that you just download from the Microsoft funnily enough, if you just search for enterprise site discovery. We'll open it up. You notice in here that you've got a group policy folder, and there is two ADMX and an ADML file. They're your settings definitions. If you're familiar with group policy, if you come to any of my sessions, you probably see me talk about those files. Basically, you need to copy them into your policy definitions or your central store in your organization to light up the enterprise mode site list discovery group policy settings. So, as Chris mentioned, you need to run a PowerShell script on your computers that you want to run this on. All right, that lights it up. But you still need to say, where do you want to output that configuration to? So I've already copied these two files over into my policy definitions. Here's a shortcut here. Do take a backup of your original one. So like here, I've got ADMX. This is the original one I had. So I just renamed it to old. Never just overwrite them. But anyhow, I've upgraded the group policies already in my organization. I'll close that. So I'll go through. I'll use the same group policy that I used to deploy my enterprise mode site list. All right, this is now the discovery we're doing. So again, Windows components, Internet Explorer. We'll scroll down here. So here I've got turn on site discovery output. So list the site's output by domain, turn on the site discovery WMI output. So do you want to go into WMI and have something then query the WMI on the machine? Or do you want to just output that to an XML? So notice here, this is an interesting point. There's a little down arrow here. So this is actually a group policy preference, which means it's a registry key that's actually written to. That's not a policy registry key, which means if you apply this policy and then take it away, the registry key actually is tattooed in the registry. So when you're applying this, you at a later stage, if you want to remove it, you have to actively remove it. If you move the computer out of an OU, that policy is not just going to disappear. Okay, just a simple note if you're wondering what that little down arrow is. So basically, I'm just going to go in, I'm going to enable the turn on the site mode output. I'm just going to put it to the users somewhere that they can write to temp. And I'm just going to call it, you know, ielist.xml. Okay, so that's pretty easy. So I'm just going to go through, do a group policy update. I have previously run the PowerShell script. On Windows 10, run the Windows 8 command. On Windows 7, run the Windows 7 command. And so the PowerShell command to enable it. So I've already done that. So I've gone through group policy update. I'm just going to open up. Oh, this is a great website here. Great group policy website there. Some guy, me, writes to it.
What a shill.
Yeah, I know. All right, so I'm going to go to group policy. What's some other website I could go to? Bing.com.
AppCompatGuy.com.
Apparently that website's pretty dodged, so I don't know if I trust it. Yeah.
It's certainly boring, that's for sure.
AppCompatGuy.com. So, again, compart. Typing is hard. Okay. All right, I've gone to two websites. Oh, well, actually, it's gone to... let's go to this website as well. So now I've gone around, I've said, oh, what was it? Justin Bieber? No.
Bieberfever.com.
I've never visited your homepage. No, it is not. So I wrote it out to the temp directory. I'm so glad my children don't know who Justin Bieber is.
Kids don't like him anymore.
All right. So here we have the output of what I've just been to, IE list. And you notice here, yep, app compart guy. So it'll even capture all those websites that you fat fingered. Okay, so basically we've gone through here, and it's outputted to this XML file, the website similar to what Chris was just showing, but you can see how it maintains a real-time list. Yes, so just bear in mind, you know, this is a very Big Brother feature. You are actually monitoring all the internet traffic of the
users. There
are
a couple of policy settings that can limit that as well.
Yes, so if we go back to here, we've got the limit site discovery output by zone. So zone mask, if you want to just limit that to the intranet zone.
Yeah, so if you didn't want to collect from the internet, you can do that. And we took a lot of feedback and had a lot of conversation, and we had the lawyers have to go over every single thing that we write on here, because different countries have different rules. Germany, in my experience, is the harshest. There are some countries where you can collect it, but it can't leave the country. It's very, very weird. So just be mindful of what the regulations are in terms of what you can collect and collect the bits that you need.
Yeah. And so note there as well, as Chris mentioned, that this is now something you can actually apply to IE8. So, of course, the group policy also applies to at least Internet Explorer 8 going forward. So that's the way you can actually collect that, Big Brother. No, not really Big Brother,
Well, the other juicy bit, and I don't know if you collected any as you went along, but we'll also collect the ActiveX controls you happen to be using on that web page.
Which is very good for compatibility,
Guys, we talk about going through and modernizing, right? Having an awareness of what are the controls that are there, because any ActiveX control is going to be an inhibitor to me getting off of IE, whether I want to move to Edge on Windows 10, whether I want to allow my folks who show up with bring your own devices that don't happen to be Windows devices, right? They're not going to work with ActiveX. And this gives me an awareness of what those obstacles are that are going to keep me tied to IE for those devices and require me to come up with a solution for that. And that really is, kind of what I think of it as, is how, when we end up with this site list, that's your to-do list. This is everything that I need to get rid of in order to break my dependency on IE. If I require a legacy dock mode, who does legacy dock modes? Only IE. So it's not going to work on my iPad. It's not going to work on my Android phone. It's not going to work on my iPhone. It's not going to work on Edge. It's not going to work in all kinds of potentially really important scenarios. So that one of the questions that comes up is, well, how should I construct this? And the advice I give is generic, I know, but here's the only way I know how to answer it. An entry in here should be an atomic unit of upgrade. So I wouldn't want to say all of Microsoft.com because there are a lot of child sites to Microsoft.com, right? I mean, in this case, I'm saying it as default, so that's good, so that child sites may behave differently. But what I want to think about is, hey, what am I going to actually do an upgrade on? Because when I upgrade, I've got to keep in mind the order of precedence of configuration of the browser. The first order is the initial group policies that determine compat view or not compat view, right? Which is the sort of sledgehammer that we used to have. It was the only thing we offered you. Full domain, full local internet zone, not super precise, not surgical. That has the lowest order of precedence. So if no one ever makes a vote at all, that's what you'll get, is whatever group policy says to get. Then the developer gets a vote. The developer gets a vote at the web server level that has a higher order of precedence than below that. They also get a second vote at the web page level with a meta tag for XUA compatible, which will override a header for XUA compatible. But then last but not least, the final vote always comes from the IT pro, because keep in mind, right, we keep learning our lesson. We keep the devs, you get the final say, and then the devs screw it up, and we have to give it back to the grown-ups in the room, which are the IT admins. And I say that as a dev, it kind of hurts me to have to do that, but it keeps being true. They get the final say. That means if you have a developer whose site today needs to behave like IE8, but they can't be bothered to throw in XUA compatible, then that means you can put in and collaborate. But then if they go and try to upgrade it to become an HTML5 website, you're going to have to take it off the site list first before it'll start working. So you'd ideally have it be one entry that gets deleted once they've done that upgrade. So an atomic unit of upgrade is the granularity that drives the best outcomes. But this is your to-do list. This is everything that's blocking you from getting full on into a modern, browser-agnostic environment. And now we can start managing it down based on business value, whether we just wait for it to age out or whether we deliberately go to seek and destroy, until we can eventually start to use Edge. Now, Edge has all kinds of benefits. I'm going to talk about the super nerdy security benefits later on today. But I want to let Alan talk a little bit about what we're going to see that's different in Edge. And I think specifically, what I wanted to look at, and let me actually bring up some numbers here for comparison, so we can get a sense of exactly what the challenge is. We're rethinking the way we do manageability in Edge. And as Alan will show us, you kind of get a little fewer knobs. And the reason why we don't just want to come back and spray the same knobs back out again is that when we started looking at what actually happened in the real world with real configurations, this number on the screen turns out to be the actual number of different possible permutations of IE group policy today. This, by way of comparison, is number of atoms in the observable universe. It turns out we don't have this many test cases.
Some people have tried, though.
How do we simplify? So let's take a look at where we are, understanding also that this is an evolving story, that now that we have Windows as a service, we don't have to wait until we have everything, but instead we can say it's going to get better, and it is going to get better. There are new things coming. As an example, on enterprise mode, believe me, we've heard the feedback that you'd really like port number support. We're working on it. We've heard the feedback that we want to be able to control things like the homepage, and we're investigating that. There are things that are changing. I don't know what's absolutely going to ship or not in all cases, but we've heard the feedback, and this will continue to evolve. Let's take a look at where we are today, though.
Okay, so we're going to have a look at the Microsoft Edge group policy settings. And again, to get the Microsoft Edge group policy settings, you don't necessarily have to be, I'm on a 2012 R2 server here. I don't have Edge on the machine, but I do have the policy settings. The way I had the policy settings was I went out and downloaded the Windows 10 ADMX pack. All right, so if you just, you know, Google on Bing, Windows 10 ADMX, you'll find the download from there. So you can then get the ADMX and upgrade. And so that then, you add that to, again, to your central store. And then we'll find here is that we have not Edge UI, so that little bit confused me. That's a Windows 8. So what we're actually looking for is Microsoft Edge. So this, as Chris alluded to, is actually slightly smaller list of group policy settings for Edge. Okay, and as you can see there, we've got a few, you know, like allow JavaScript. These are the bare bones. Edge is an evolving browser. It's only at version 1. I'm sure they're going to go through and release more versions, you know, under the hood, you know, Revit. But right now, we have this option here, allow you to configure the enterprise site list, which is suspiciously similar to the site list we had for Internet Explorer. In fact, what I can do is I can use exactly the same list. So what I'm going to just go through here, go through, add. All right, I'm going to configure Edge to use the exact same group policy. Notice here, there isn't a group policy, as Chris said, to modify the home page. Okay, so by default, Edge usually opens, you know, where to next, empowering the user. Shall I show them the registry key?
I love the registry. Let's bounce back to the group policies for a second. Yeah. I want to actually show something that's important. While you're doing that, if we click back over to the DC, while that updates, right beneath the one he highlighted is another option, which is, hey, you know what? I could either have a list that says these intranet sites need IE and bounce over to them, or I can just say all of them need IE. We wanted to give you the easy button if you really want it, but we think it's very, very preferable to only use IE when you need it, not to just say all blanket things that map up to my local intranet zone, which is heuristically determined, will bounce me back to IE. It's there, it is an option, and we recommend being much more precise and surgical rather than clobbering the whole thing, because once again, that's gonna have precedence over everything else, and you're gonna potentially block people from using Edge in legitimate use cases in the enterprise if you do that. So it might be easier now, but long-term, there are ramifications of that.
Okay, so I've configured the site list now for Edge. Oh, look, New Zealand Airport beefs up by security. Okay, so I'm just going to go in here, and I'm just going to go in intranet. Hasn't downloaded the latest. Hang on, where's that registry key? Okay, I'm just going to delete this here. So what I'm trying to show you here, is what I'm hoping it will do, is when I open the intranet.
You're batting 1,000 so far, don't fail now. We've got like 4 more minutes.
That's, okay, hang on. Right. What did that just open? So that just opened. Oh, I might have my XML run the wrong way. Let me very quickly, what have I got here? I do. The internet. Oh, that's just my problem there. I'm trying to open the internet in IE mode, which I don't want. So what I want to do is I want to go through here. I want to untick this. Save that out. All right. In fact, what I'm just going to do is delete that.
Oh, we did see it working correctly with DC01, so that's close enough.
Yeah.
Right, but you can see the impact of what happens is we automatically just opened up and stuck in front IE for a site that requested it.
Yeah. So as you can see here, when I tried to open that website there, which I incorrectly set to say open in IE, what it actually did was went to the website and opened it in IE, and it said, you know, automatically open this website in future, or, you know, the keep going with this down this path if you, no, I really want to see how this website will break. So what this feature really does is something that actually something that Chrome has done for a while. Chrome has a policy because the Chrome
legacy browser support.
Thank you. Legacy browser support. So it's very similar to that. So, but when you have IE, maybe you have Windows 7 in your organization, and you do have IE 8 still deployed, but users have been demanding a newer browser. And of course, you know, speaking, you know, practically, you've probably had to deploy Chrome for some of these users, and you've used something like legacy mode support to actually say, okay, well, if someone goes to Chrome and tries to open up an internet site, open it up in Internet Explorer instead. So if you are going to move to Windows 10, though, you now have Edge browser installed, which is a highly modern standard, very performant, very secure web browser, right, that can be used very effectively when you're opening up any of the internet websites, you know, any of the online services online. So what you could do is you could use this, instead of getting users to use Chrome, you could actually use Edge, right, using the same compatibility list. You're now not having to maintain two compatibility lists because you have the same compatibility list for both IE and Edge. So it's a single point of administration, which is less overhead for you. The users still get a great experience online. They're still using a great web browser, which is highly HTML compliant. But it's easier for you to manage in the long run. So moving to Windows 10 actually means it's like, well, you could use Chrome if you really want to, but there's no compelling reason to do that if your users are saying, hey, I really need to open this website that doesn't work in IE 8. Of course, if you've moved to IE 10, you can't open an IE 8 anyway, but at least you've got the backwards compatibility option, right? You're not forced to have to install these other browsers with different management in your environment when you do the migration. So, all right, so Edge, you can configure URLs, configure where you want to throw them over to Internet Explorer. And so basically, we have the group policy settings. It's also interesting, it's important to note, Edge is also a browser that's going to be able to be managed by Intune. Okay, you're going to be able to go into Intune and manage the browser. So even those computers that aren't domain connected, but your BYO devices, the ones that have come across. And that's an ever-evolving story, as Chris said as well. You are going to be able to specify URLs or configuration URLs go in at the moment. You might be able to see some of it's lit up. More is coming soon. But you are going to also be able to configure Edge browser using Intune. So something that I'm talking about in one of my sessions tomorrow is actually how you use Intune to manage your environment, but also how that complements or works with, or how you make that work with group policy, because then you have two configuration platforms, and when you have two configuration platforms, you have to be careful for them not to conflict with each other. So I'm doing a session tomorrow morning about that, where I'll go through explaining how Intune and group policy together will really give you best of both worlds. So,
yep. Yeah, so in closing, I mean, that really is the story that we're trying to tell. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to get off of wherever you are today, unless it's IE 11, to IE 11 fast and leverage the compat features. And then at your own pace, get to modern browsers, whether that be the latest dock mode in IE 11 or Edge or browser neutrality, ideally, so something that stops the matter, at a pace that makes sense for your organization. We're going to continue to support IE11. It is there to keep your applications working as we think long-term, what are the architectural changes we need to implement to embrace the modern way that web pages and web browsers are being designed in a way that makes sense for your business, and to always have that forward look towards, hey, I want to get towards something like an Edge and like the other modern browsers that are out there. That's our goal, and hopefully, you know, you've really seen that we've made a lot of progress. I think we have. We want to make it as easy as possible, and we're still listening, so please continue to give us your feedback. I'm @compatguy@microsoft.com.
I'm @AlanBurchell at Twitter. So thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great decade.
Great. Thank you very much.